Welcome to episode 17 of the Queer History Podcast. It's been a difficult couple of weeks, I'm guessing. I've been going through finals myself, and I can't imagine that life has been any easier on you lot. Luckily, we can take some time to focus on a small moment of happiness in this episode. We will be exploring the lives and marriage of Jane and Paul Bowles in order to better understand queer platonic relationships and the comfort being amongst other queer individuals allows. Some business reminders, new and old. Firstly, we hit $100 on our Patreon for every article that Laura writes, which is incredible. I can't believe it. It's amazing. And I am so grateful to all of you who got on board and to all of you who support the podcast in other ways. If you're still interested in becoming a patron, we will happily accept you. You can follow the link over to the Patreon that is in the Tumblr description of this episode. Laura will be going on hiatus for a little while come January, but I will not, so the Queer History Patreon should still be updated with relative frequency. Likewise, Queer History is still taking one-time donations, so if you don't want to commit to becoming a patron, you can still support Laura and myself. We also appreciate all likes and reblogs of the podcast and articles on Tumblr. Your asks and emails are a delight as well, so if you want to get in touch with us, go ahead and take a peek at our Tumblr, or email us at queerhistorypatreon@gmail.com. Now, let's refocus and look to Jane and Paul Bowles. Both Jane and Paul would grow to become authors of short stories, plays, and novels during their lifetimes. They should not only be defined, however, by their status as a couple, nor by their professions. Paul was born in 1910 in New York. According to Jeffrey Myers in the article The Oddest Couple, while still in his teens, Paul published poems in the French avant-garde magazine Transition. He left the University of Virginia after one semester, lived in Paris, studied composition with Aaron Copland, and met Gertrude Stein, among many other writers. This source also emphasizes Paul's love of travel. He seems to have spent the bulk of his post-school youth traveling through North America, Central America, and Europe. Jane, comparatively, was born in 1917, also in New York. Myers states that she broke her leg when she was young and contracted tuberculosis of the knee, an illness that, up until now, I didn't know existed. Laura Mills, in the Queer History article, states that Jane was in New York City when she met Paul, and about halfway through an aborted trip to Mexico did their relationship truly bloom. Prior to this, Jane was known to take numerous female lovers. Her mother, according to Myers, became thoroughly exasperated with her and believed that she would never settle down. As Jane's romantic liaisons didn't stop, I could say that she probably didn't care too much about her mother's opinion. Nadine Hubbs, in The Queer Composition of America's Sound, Gay Modernist, American Music, and National Identity, claims that Bowles' biographer Tomasini, quote, identifies Jane Bowles as thoroughly lesbian. Mills and other sources cited in this episode verify this claim and suggest that Jane preferred relationships with women as opposed to men, both before and during her marriage. The nature of Jane's sexuality, however, as well as Paul's, is complicated. The two of them came together in what appeared to be a marriage of convenience, though of love. According to Mills, Jane said she wanted to keep her virginity intact until she was married, and when Paul asked her to move in with him, she turned him down. Moving in with a man without marrying him, she said, wasn't something she wanted to do. In response, Paul proposed. Hubbs refers to this as the beginning of a strange and elaborate marriage. The first year and a half of marriage between Paul and Jane is noted to be sexual, but after this time had passed, it is said that the marriage became asexual. Jane is the one credited with ending the sexual nature of the partnership by a couple of our sources, though this may or may not be true. It's interesting as well, after this point in their marriage, Jane engaged in relationships primarily with women, whereas Paul Bowles was more complicated. Hubbs claims that Paul is described as essentially homosexual. He appears as the most thorough and extreme embodiment of the term queer. I'd like to unpack this statement. Jane's intermarital relationships were better publicized than Paul's, though Mills gives him the label of bisexual and claims that he had relationships with both men and women while being married to Jane. However, his biographers flip-flop on their views of his sexuality. Some claimed that he never engaged in relationships with men and only appeared to be gay aesthetically. Others claimed that he was gay, but passively so. Others cite an unsuccessful attempt to rekindle a sexual relationship with Jane, and claim that Paul was a rather sexual being. This diversity of sources presents not so much a problem, but rather a conundrum, a historical curtain that's been drawn over the truth of the matter. Paul's sexuality defies a specific label, as accounts of his history are so diverse. This defiance, along with his unconventional marriage, may have been what led Hubbs to give him the title of essentially homosexual. Emphasis on the essentially. The term essentially could also be Hubbs's attempt to pull a no homo on the reader, but it does capture the complexity of Paul's sexuality quite well. In the end, it really is the label of queer that suits Paul best of all. The title of writer could also be applied to both Paul and Jane far more easily than anything else. Jane began her writing career first, in a way, though Mills claims that her writing block was more infamous than her work. Among her pieces, she produced a novel titled Two Serious Ladies, a short story called Camp Cataract, and a play entitled In the Summer House. These pieces met with marginal success. Two Serious Ladies follows the lives of two upper-crust women as they succumb to the darkness in the world. Darkness, of course, being their sexual desires, which were oh so scary to many in the reading audience of Jane's time. Camp Cataract proves to be a romp of a story about two sisters that leads to a tragic end. In the Summer House seems to explore the complexities of mother-daughter relationships and explores themes of love and loneliness. A lot of English professors nowadays tell their students not to conflate story with authorial intent, or with the life of the author who was writing the work. I'm not going to make claims about the work Jane wrote, as I'd need to do a more thorough reading of the sources themselves. However, creative writers often pull from their lives when creating their work. Two Serious Ladies, in its exploration of sexuality, mirrors itself in Jane's own life. In the Summer House's complex familial relationships could draw parallels to Jane's own relationship with her mother. Fiction is always an excellent place to work at the more complicated aspects of life. The invocation of the personal, however, doesn't mean a work is always going to be successful. Sometimes it can even ostracize the reader. Paul's work, as compared to Jane's, was said to be written with distinction. Essayist Meisel claimed that he was, quote, the bridge between the lost generation and the beat generation with his novel The Sheltering Sky and other short stories. Paul composed as well as wrote, but his work was always more successful than Jane's. The Sheltering Sky followed a couple dealing with fractures in their marriage and details a bit of the colonist mindset that both Jane and Paul seemed to have. Laura Mills makes a point of highlighting this latent racism during the couple's life in the country of Tangier. Again, not to make literary assumptions, but perhaps the couple in The Sheltering Sky were not as far away from reality as many English professors would have readers suppose. With all of this struggle and strangeness in mind, as depicted both in literature and in real life, it can be said that the relationship between Jane and Paul Bowles was definitely not standardly heterosexual. It isn't even standardly queer. Laura Mills refers to their partnership as queer platonic, and notes this label's connection to the Arrow Ace community. I'm not entirely sure how to refer to this relationship. The connection between Jane and Paul is undeniable. They were friends and it seemed they love each other in a platonic manner, if not vaguely romantically. Their relationship reminds me a bit of the one that existed between Virginia Woolf and Leonard Woolf. Both parties loved each other, but their marriage was an open one and their sex life was next to non-existent. It's evident in any case that relationships such as the one between Jane and Paul had existed before in the queer community, and that they continue to exist to this day. In some ways, marriages between two queer individuals who are relatively uninterested in one another provide a support system that can be utilized against a generally heterosexual world. The appearance of heterosexuality can be kept up, while an open relationship can allow the two partners involved to embrace the truth about themselves. Regardless, the marriage between Jane and Paul Bowles seems to have been one based on mutual respect and affection, and it lasted up until Jane's death in 1973. Their relationship may stand as unconventional in many senses and scenarios, but their affection and the complexity of their relationship should not be lost to time. Thank you for listening, everyone. I know some of us have holidays coming up. Hanukkah begins on December 24th this year and ends on New Year's Day in some strange yet wonderful twist of timing. Queer History's next episode is due to drop on December 30th, and it might, or we may experience some holiday and Wi-Fi related delays. Time will tell. Until then, take care of yourselves. Enjoy the weather, if it is cold or warm, wherever you are. And remember, history is queerer than you think.